Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Normally, the day after a debate, the discussion is about that debate. But not in 2020, because less than 24 hours after the only vice presidential debate in a race where one candidate for president has a potentially deadly virus and the other is the oldest nominee in history, the president made new debate news. In response to the decision to make the next presidential debate virtual out of concerns about virus spread, he said this on Fox Business.
No, I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate. That's not what debating's all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous. And then they cut you off whenever they want.
Now, ironically, that potentially raises the stakes from last night's vice presidential debate. With future presidential debates unsettled, it is at least possible that last night would be the last time the two campaigns face off before Election Day. So, did Massachusetts learn what we need to learn? Let's talk about that. And I want to ask you, did you watch the VP debate? Did you learn anything from it? Did you learn what you wanted to learn from it? Was it more important to you than maybe previous vice presidential debates, given the age and health of the presidential candidates? Join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us now is Ira Stoll, Boston-based editor of thefutureofcapitalism.com and author of the book JFK, Conservative. Ira, welcome to Radio Boston.
Happy to be here.
And Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Reverend Mariama, welcome back.
Good to be here.
So I'm going to ask each of you the same question to start, and that's the same question we just asked the listeners. What did you learn from last night's debate? Do you have a headline? Ira, let's have you go first.
Well, it was a pretty dramatic contrast from the presidential debate, which was kind of a pro wrestling match where the candidates kept interrupting each other and the moderator was sort of overpowered by the huge personality of President Trump, who can be erratic and unpredictable and rough around the edges. Last night, Vice President Pence was more controlled, so disciplined as to be almost robotic. I think the emblematic moment of the debate, which admittedly is hard to translate into radio, was when a fly came by and landed on Vice President Pence's head. Now, this wasn't just a flyby by this fly. The fly actually camped out in the vice president's hair it seemed like a long time. I mean, long enough for the fly to have to pay monthly rent, not just a daily hotel fee or something. And Pence didn't even acknowledge that the fly was there. He didn't swat at it. He didn't let his eyes. It was almost like he was made of wax. And, you know, that can cut both ways because he could seem almost hard to relate to. But I think for people who were unsettled by the presidential debate, it seemed almost like this was a relief that there was someone who was a little more in control of himself out there on the debate stage.
So, Reverend Mariama, other than the incredibly still fly that proved that's really what the internet was paying attention to, if nothing else, what did you learn from last night's debate?
Well, my takeaway about the fly is that he must have had a lot of gel or hairspray on, because if that was the case, maybe he couldn't feel the fly. That was just my assessment. But on the whole, it was clearly less of a debacle than the previous. I actually had a slightly different reaction to Pence, and it's interesting. So I think on the whole, he did what he needed to do. There were a lot of questions that he could not provide an honest answer to without looking bad. And I think he did a good job of just not answering the questions he didn't want to answer. And, you know, while as a voter, I might not have liked that, I'll say as a debate performance that I think he did a pretty good job in saying what he wanted to say and not answering what he didn't want to. That being said, I particularly as a woman, thought he was pretty rude in the way that he never paid attention to the moderator. I happen to know that they usually have you know, a timing clock in there. So he knew when his time was up and he just chose not to to stop talking. Times when he came and asked direct questions to Kamala Harris. So from my perspective, I thought he was a bit bullish. Clearly, when you hold him up against Donald Trump, he looks tame. But were I in a conversation with him, I would have had to say, I need you to pull it together and let's have a more civil dialogue. And I thought I might be the only one. I did check around. I had a good conversation with a friend of mine, older white male. And he said, no, that's actually, I asked him for his overall perspective and he noticed the same thing. So I don't know, maybe that plays well with his base. I was interested to see how that played with older voters who they're trying to reattract, how it played with other women voters. But yeah, for me, I think his answers were good, but his demeanor, while clearly better than President Trump, was frustrating.
Listeners, if you want to join this conversation, whether it's to tell us how you named the fly or to reflect on the procedure and the presentation of these two vice presidential candidates or what it means given the new news about debate today, call and join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. There is a lot of substance I want to get into, but on this short news cycle in which we now live, we have new news today, which is that next week's presidential debate, first it was moved to virtual, then the president said, well, I won't participate in a virtual debate. Then there were a number of back and forths about, okay, do we move that one? And if so, then the president wants another one. And Joe Biden says, I don't want a third one on October 29th. Lots of kerfuffle and back and forth today. It calls into question what will happen in the presidential debate. And I want to ask you, Ira, as a result, does it make the impressions and the answers from last night more important even than given that these are two people who are a heartbeat away from a presidency with two presidents who are two of the oldest candidates in history and one is infected with the coronavirus?
Yeah, well, the moderator, Susan Page, actually asked that question, kind of if they were prepared to step in as president, and asked them if they, because their running mates were both so old and in Trump's case had been hospitalized the weekend before, if they'd had a conversation about what happens if they are unable to be president, if, you know, in what circumstances the vice president would kind of push to take over or step in. And, you know, I think for both of them, viewers could probably come away somewhat reassured. We've talked a bit about Vice President Pence. We haven't really talked much about Kamala Harris. And I actually saw her during the Democratic primary campaign in person in New Hampshire and watched a lot of Democratic primary debates where she was there on the stage. And I think she upped her game considerably from what she was doing as a Democratic presidential candidate. And she seemed confident and in control last night. Mariama mentioned that Vice President Pence talked through the moderator. But Kamala Harris also had quite a commanding presence when Pence tried to talk over her. She had this phrase, "I am speaking," and it was very clear, "Don't mess with me," sort of message. And you know, I was just sort of intimidated watching it in my living room. People were joking about using that around their house, you know, with their kids. "I am speaking." So, you know, I think if this is the last we see from the vice presidential candidates for a while, people will come away with probably more confidence than they did beforehand about the capabilities of both these candidates.
I'm gonna run to the phones real quick, grab a couple calls, and then Reverend Mariama, I'm gonna come to you. 1-800-423-8255. Let's start with Laura in West Roxbury. Laura, go ahead.
Oh, hello, and thank you. I get furious when they do not answer the questions. And I think that the person that's in charge should say to them, you did not answer the question. And I wouldn't give it back to them, but I would just state it as the people listening found out. And then I thought he was very rude, how he talked beyond his time. And he wasn't saying anything anyways. Oh, excuse me. You probably can tell, you know, that I'm not a real Republican. So,
well, Laura, I appreciate the call. And if you don't mind, I'm going to take it back from you there because I also want to get in Elon from Somerville. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted
to say
that what I noticed immediately last night, and it actually happened a couple times, was that Harris had a very similar strategy as Biden did in the presidential debate, where she addressed the audience directly. At several points, she looked directly at the camera, sort of addressing the American people directly. And I thought it was particularly an effective strategy, and it served her well, and it served Biden well in addition. I think one of the particular moments that it really worked and hit home was talking about the coronavirus and talking about the economic effects.
Let's take it back from you there. Thank you for that, Elon. So, Reverend Mariama, we have two calls there, both talking about frustrations or being impressed with the stylistic choices, the way the candidates chose to answer the questions. I also want to pick up on what Iris said, which he talked about the question they got asked about, essentially the presidential succession of power if each president was potentially sick. I was actually struck by the fact that I felt they didn't answer that question. Neither of them did. And to Laura's point, was there an obligation with a question that important in this moment? Should they have been forced to? And was there any way to force either of them to take that head on?
Yeah. I think neither of them did answer it. And I think I would have been surprised had they done so. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the job of the vice president is usually really to be partially a cheerleader for the presidential candidate. And so you don't want to really draw attention to anything that looks like weakness. I wish we lived in a different kind of political world where folks could just be more frank and where we as voters rewarded people for being more frank. But, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I think this is true in races. Like, we don't always really want you to tell us the full truth. We sort of want you to make us feel good. So I wasn't exactly surprised that they didn't answer that. But I wish they would, because I would like to know that that is the case. It seems for me particularly pressing that, you know, Vice President Pence and President Trump should have had that conversation, you know, in the last week or so. So I would have loved to know that that was
a thing. So let's get into some specific topics. And I have said before that somebody I spoke with at one point said the coronavirus is not the gorilla in the room, it's the room. And it was sort of the room for the conversation last night, too. I want to play an exchange early in the night between the two vice presidential candidates over the handling of the pandemic.
President Trump and I trust the American people to make choices in the best interest of their health. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris consistently talk about mandates, and not just mandates with the coronavirus, but a government takeover of health care.
Thank you,
Green New Deal, all government control. We're about freedom and respecting the freedom of the American people.
Let's talk about respecting the American people. You respect the American people when you tell them the truth. You respect the American people when you have the courage to be a leader speaking of those things that you may not want people to hear, but they need to hear so they can protect themselves.
Ira, I saw a lot of people respond in social media pretty immediately to the vice president's choice to frame that as a question about freedom of and trust of the American people versus the behaviors and choices of the administration. Did that sell for you?
Well, look, the Trump administration is in a difficult spot with this coronavirus because, as Harris repeatedly pointed out, more than 200,000 people have died. You know, it was a little like Bush running for re-election during the Iraq War, except the casualties there were much smaller. So, you know, they're trying different responses to that. Trump tried well, we're going to have a vaccine real soon, and we're doing a great job with the vaccine. Pence's approach of saying, well, actually, like, Americans are have been really brave and working hard to fight this. And if you're saying that the Trump administration is doing a bad job on the virus, what you're really doing is you're attacking all the nurses and emergency room doctors and people trying to keep their businesses open. And, he doesn't have a lot of great cards to play on the virus, at least until there's a vaccine approved, or if the situation worsens in Europe as it is. Like, I would have liked to see Pence say, the case fatality ratio is worse in Spain and France, and President Trump isn't the president there. So, how do you account for that? Maybe even they've got national health care there the way you want to bring it here.
So, Ira, let me pick up. I want to pick up on that for a second. I have a little more sound to play because you mentioned the vaccine twice, and I do want to pick up on that. I want to do a back and forth here. First, Kamala Harris on the fact that she doesn't trust a vaccine that only the president vouches for.
If the public health professionals, if Dr. Fauci, if the doctors tell us that we should take it, I'll be the first in line to take it. Absolutely. But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
And Vice President Mike Pence pushed back on her, saying that she was undermining efforts to fight the virus.
The fact that you continue to undermine public confidence in a vaccine, if the vaccine emerges during the Trump administration, I think is unconscionable. And Senator, I just ask you, stop playing politics with people's lives.
I was very interested in that exchange, Reverend Mariama. Again, Ira made a couple of references to it already. I felt like there was a little bit of a role reversal in some of the messaging there, and I wasn't entirely sure if there's a way to know kind of who won, quote unquote, the exchange about the vaccine. I'd be interested in your reactions.
So I will give Pence credit. I think that he's working with a terrible hand about coronavirus. And I think, to be honest with you, I thought he played the best he could from a sort of political perspective. That being said, did it convince me or anybody else? Not so sure, because, the hand he was dealt was pretty bad. I think in terms of the vaccine, I think it is super complex. In all transparency, I am part of one of the vaccines trials, and I've had conversations with my congregants, and quite a few of them are concerned about taking the vaccine. And one of them said to me, she said, I'm not against science. I'm just concerned about big pharma and human beings and the politics of this. So I think that Kamala Harris's response, I think, aligns with where many folks in the country are. But I do think that Pence's pivot did the best he could to try to undermine that and strengthen his hand. So I think on the facts on the ground, he should have lost that outright. I was a little surprised that she didn't name that he is running the COVID task force. So it's not even just President Trump's fault. This is one she could have pinned squarely on him. That didn't quite happen, so...
So I want to get one more caller voice in before we run out of time, and we are close to the end here. But we've got Chris on the line from Hyde Park. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So the idea I had was maybe there should be live fact-checking happening, at least on the TV version of the debates. Whoever handles the fact-checking, it's a lot of logistics, I know. But if they had that happening real time, at least then the viewer would have a sense rather than have to sort of read the next day who told more of the truth than not. And I'll take the rest on the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for that, Chris. We have about 30 seconds left. So, Ira, very briefly, did we get a good exchange of facts last night? Briefly.
Yeah. I think the internet makes it possible for people to go to a lot of sources and check the facts, or, you know, we check the facts here on, on the radio. I don't know that it's a little bit of a heavy ask for the debate moderators to do that in real time because.
All right. You know, I got to take it back from you there, Ira. I'm so sorry. That's Ira Stoll, a future of capitalism.com, and Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor of the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester. Thanks so much to both of you.